This is Christy Tennant Crispin with International Arts Movement, and you're listening to I Am Conversations. Last year, TS Poetry Press released a brand new collection of poems by Anne M. Doe Overstreet. Delicate Machinery Suspended is the first published collection of her poetry, which has also appeared in Asheville Poetry Review, Nimrod International Journal of Prose and Poetry, and DMQ Review, among a number of other publications. Gregory Wolfe of Image Journal wrote of Delicate Machinery Suspended, "These poems shimmer with gossamer lightness, but also possess the strength and sinews of hard-won wisdom and what Henry James called felt life." And poet Scott Cairns said, "To love well is to offer one's full attention. To serve others is often a matter of drawing their attention to the beauties, broken, wounded, suggestive, profound, that visit us endlessly. Anne Overstreet loves well, and she serves well. She is the witness of the dawn and of our desired awakening." I just love that. She lives in Seattle with her husband, author Jeffrey Overstreet, and today it's my pleasure to be speaking with poet Anne M. Doe Overstreet. Hi, Anne.
Good morning, Christy.
It's so good to finally be speaking with you. I've been wanting to do this since I first read Delicate Machinery Suspended. What month did it come out? I couldn't remember exactly when that was.
It came out in late July 2011.
That's right. And I was at the opening or the launch, whatever, the release party, which was just wonderful. Well, I would love to hear you kind of share a bit about your journey into the world of poetry and through the world of poetry and kind of becoming a confirmed poet. When did you first kind of discover your own love for poetry?
Well, I grew up on poetry. Everybody in my family reads voraciously, and my father used to read the classic poets, mostly British poets, to us for bedtime stories. So I grew up on Kipling and Wordsworth and people like that for our bedtime reading. So I grew up developing that ear, I think. But I didn't formally start to write until I was in college, and I took an independent studies poetry class with a poet named Nicholas Barker, and we had an assignment to critique a piece from a stack of choices, and I decided to critique some of his work, and he was happy enough with my critique that he made some changes to the poem before he submitted it.
Wow.
And I knew at that point that attention to particular word choice was important to me, and that's when I landed on poetry, I think.
Wow. Getting published in journals and poetry reviews is probably kind of the next step of kind of entering into the world of I don't know, vocational poetry. I don't know if that would be the right word to call it, but yeah. But last year you had a full collection of poems published. How was that experience for you? And how was it different kind of from submitting single poems here and there to different journals?
Well, getting the collection from beginning to publication was a very different process, obviously, from just submitting a single stack of poems. I think the big challenge for me was taking a collection of poems and determining how they fit together and whether or not they could be more as a group than they were singly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually having trouble with that. I'd sent it out a couple of times and didn't feel like I'd really made it click. And I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with Laura Barkat of TS Poetry Press before I knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about different approaches to pulling a collection together. And as a result of that conversation, she asked me to send her the pile of poems that I'd been sending out and said she'd love to continue the conversation, and I did send them, and she got back to me and said that they were really interested in the work and would like to publish it, and that they would be happy to work with me at pulling the collection together. I really enjoyed that process, working with an editor who saw connections that I hadn't seen, gave me a whole new vision for the poems as a group. And I really enjoyed taking a second look at them and seeing them in a slightly different light.
Were there poems that were that you kind of had to sacrifice to not include in the book because they just didn't seem, they were poems that you loved but didn't work in the whole body of that poetry?
There were a few, and there were actually a couple that the editors liked that I thought in the end were not quite ready to be sent out into the world, and made that choice myself. Mm-hmm. But I'm slow, so I didn't have a lot of extra poems that I thought were really ready to go out. So there weren't a lot I pulled out. My biggest struggle in pulling the collection together was that I tend to write about very disparate subjects, mm-hmm. And don't necessarily see a connection between more than like three or four at a time. So that was something I thought might stop me from getting it out as a collection, and mm-hmm. they were able to really show me how that worked together. I think the one link that I have running through the most of the work is my focus on place, and we really bumped that up a bit, I think.
Yeah, that really came through, and I love it. One of the things that I found interesting in Delicate Machinery Suspended was the four short essays that introduce each section of the book, and it made me ask, do you write essays regularly also, or was that something that was kind of new? Did they suggest it, or was that your idea? Kind of how did that portion of the book come about?
I hadn't actually written any essays, you know, other than college work years and mm-hmm. years ago. But that was actually my publisher's idea. One of the things that TS Poetry really likes to do is to give the reader a broader sense of the poet mm-hmm. as a person and as a writer. They did ask for at least one essay that talked about where I was from. I believe that was the first mm-hmm. piece that I wrote. So that was actually the one I found the easiest to do, since I write a lot about place.
Right.
I tried hard not to use the essays to explain the sections that followed,
right.
but to just suggest an intuitive connection mm-hmm. to the section.
Mm-hmm.
But that was new for me. I really enjoyed it, and I'd like to pursue that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was rereading them kind of, I read the book shortly after it came out, and then in preparation for talking with you today, I reread, you know, some portions of it and those essays, and their poetry in themselves, I mean, maybe not in form, but certainly in your word choices and in what happens in my own heart as I read them, those essays affected me as poems do, rather than, you know, typically writing essays. So you know, certainly that sensibility comes through in that.
I'm glad to hear that, and I have to say that when I was intimidated by the idea of adding the essays, which was something I wasn't aware of going into the project, and they were something that I hadn't written before. Jeff told me to think about them as long prose poems, and
oh, yeah.
That's what unstuck me. So
that's great.
And I guess that comes across, maybe.
Yes, for sure. Robert Frost once wrote in a letter, a poem begins as a lump in the throat, a sense of wrong, a homesickness, a lovesickness. And I wondered, how do your poems begin?
I would say that's not too far off. I think my poems generally come out of two different places, and they're probably connected. But one is if I've been reading something, a poem or a piece of fiction, and I have a strong response to what I've said, or I have a question about something that wasn't addressed or that wasn't answered, some of my poems start from that.
Mm-hmm.
I also tend to write about things, odd little things that obsess me. One of the poems in the book is called Whale Fall, and I saw a bit of a news story about the progression of how a whale carcass disintegrates once the whale has died, as it falls to the ocean floor. And mm-hmm. just thought, how cool is that? I mean, mm-hmm. it was beautiful
mm-hmm.
And odd, and you know, who knows about it? And so I had to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my obsessions and my part of the broader conversation are generally what inspires something.
And how do you know when your poem is finished? Or is it ever finished? Do you publish it and then wish later that you could go back and tweak it again?
They are finished sometimes. One of the pieces in the book is titled The Bearded Lady Asleep, mm-hmm. which is one of my absolute favorites. And it feels to me as if it's perfectly balanced and there's just nothing else I could do to it mm-hmm. to improve it. And I know that one is finished. I've had poems that I've sent out that I thought were finished, and I might go back and look at them a couple years later and see things I could have done, but they were finished for the point in the stage I was at as a poet. And there are other pieces I've sent out that I just wanted to get them out, and I knew I might continue to monkey with them. But they have to be close to feeling finished
right
to me before I set them out.
Right. I attended the release party for the book at Elliott Bay Bookstore last year here in Seattle, and it was a packed event, which was very exciting for me because, of course, I wanted to see both poetry celebrated and you celebrated. One of the things that I learned there, though, that I really didn't know about kind of your life and process is that you are part of a writer's group that's been meeting for a long time, and I would love to ask about that because I just consistently am fascinated by the role of community, especially in something that is so individual as writing poetry can be. Can you share a bit about that group, kind of how it started and when you meet and what you do and how it's played a role in your own development as a writer?
Absolutely. I think that this particular group has been invaluable. I've met with smaller groups in the past, and it's lovely, and people show up, and we work until someone gets a different job or their schedule changes or whatever. But this particular group started out as a group of 11 after I had participated in the UW's writing certificate program, the Poetry Track, and 11 of us wanted to continue meeting and working. And I think that the core group that survived that, we're down to 5 women. Mm-hmm. But we've been meeting for close to, I think we figured 13 years.
Wow.
And there have been seasons when we haven't met every week, but for the most part, we do in some configuration. So we've been doing it a long time. And it's, I'll tell you, there are a couple of things that I get out of it. One is, It makes it work in a sense. It validates that it's work.
Yeah.
We show up. We bring drafts. We critique. Everybody in that group is a fantastic critic. So we grow, but we're also really committed to getting our work out there. It's not a book club, as if that were
a bad thing.
But it's, we don't just get together and play. Everybody in that group is seriously committed to their work, and everybody in the core group right now has at least one book project out, if not more. And we all read locally when we can and are involved in different poetry organizations. So it's just, it helps me take it seriously. And it's certainly been good for my work ethic to know that, you know, I can miss a week or two of not having a draft, but I don't want to miss a whole lot more.
Right. You know? Somebody's going to hold you accountable. They want to see it.
Yep.
That's great. I would love to ask you to read a poem from the book, and I know I gave you a heads up about one of my favorite poems, but you just mentioned one of your favorite poems. So I'd actually love it if you would read, I think it's page 49, The Bearded Lady Asleep. Do you mind doing that?
Oh, no, I don't mind at all.
That'd be great.
Let me just flip over here. Yes, I do. I'm a bit of an insomniac, and so I do have a little section on insomnia when I'm sleeping. The bearded lady asleep. She rests her pretty curls, white cotton gloves upon her hands. She sleeps secure and does not miss the dawn, fallen sparrow in God's palm. The hairs on her face so delicate, and the Lord who created her, who knew her in her mother's womb, cradles her head in time. Soft the tents are struck, soft the evening clocks chiming, from her pillow singing, rising from her pillow's dream. Open to the evening, untangling locks and knots of beard, she is known of God, chosen Adam, chosen Eve, knows he makes them in his mirror, female, male, he makes them her. His glory is in her hair. Listen for her off-key humming.
Without wanting to ask you to say too much about it, because it stands obviously on its own, can you share why this is one of your favorite poems of yours?
I it reads well. Occasionally you write something that just sits in your mouth right, and mm-hmm. you know it's yours. And I think mm-hmm. that's one of those for me.
Mm-hmm.
I also find the question of what it is to be human intriguing. And, you know, I think back to the creation. It's one of those small obsession things that I get going on. I think back to the creation of Adam and how he was a complete human being before God drew Eve out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And just wondering about what that being was like, and thinking that maybe the bearded lady represents in some form mm-hmm. both the male and female is just fascinating
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that she seems quite comfortable in her own skin.
Yeah.
And in God's love in that particular moment. So
I think that is one of the gifts that poetry offers, and that truly good poets give the world, that is probably one of the things that I'm so grateful for about poetry, because it's that sense of seeing and articulating, but usually not with a lot of words, but in a sort of economy of words, communicating really huge, eternal, significant things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that poem does that in a way that's very, very profound. When I read Scott Cairns' quote about your book, I think that was one of the poems that he had to be thinking about when he wrote that.
I hope so.
Yeah. The idea of being a poet is quite romantic, and I confess that when I fantasize about a different life than the one I have, my fantasy has me spending hours on end in a silent room with a hot cup of coffee, with my cat purring beside me, and the luxury of being able to spend an hour or two deciding between the words juice or nectar.
Mm-hmm.
Without wanting to dispel my own fantasy, what is the life of a poet like? And in your experience, at least, how do you find and carve out that time to sit silently and wait for that right word or that right phrase to kind of land?
Well, I think it's a very individual thing. I'm sure of it, having worked with the other women in my group, all of whom write poetry, as well as other things. I think there's actually a balance that has to be struck between, at least for me, between treating it as work, as a discipline, and incorporating the stillness. My favorite part of it is sitting quietly and thinking and playing around with the word. But I also try to build in regular time where I sit down and I give myself a certain amount of time and I just start writing.
Mm-hmm.
I do the timed writings that I think mm-hmm. Natalie Goldberg perhaps suggested doing often before I start, just to keep that muscle flexed. It's wonderful to have inspiration, and it's wonderful to play, but you have to have that muscle that takes it the step beyond, that takes the moment of inspiration and builds something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't keep your pen moving, I think it inhibits your ability to capture that thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that, you know, one of my favorite parts of the whole process is playing on paper and finding out what's going on in my own head that maybe I wasn't conscious of.
Mm-hmm.
So I do need time, solitary time and quiet time to do that. But I've also learned to write in airports and cafes and things like that. If you have a full life, it's difficult to have the whole morning to sit down and write. I wish that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't often, but I do try to write on a fairly regular basis, at least for a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
so that I keep that muscle flexed
mm-hmm.
Or flexible.
And do you get feedback from people early in the process, or do you work on it for a while before you show it to anyone?
It depends on who I'm showing it to. With my particular writing group, we've been together for so long that I can bring a really rough draft and say, you know, read this, I just want your general response. What does it make you think of? Do you think there's a coherent idea?
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrapping it up? General questions like that. I don't think there are very many other people that I would bring that rough of a draft, because it's hard not to put your own perspective on a raw poem, I think. So I know somehow that's not grammatically correct, but you know what I mean.
I do. Do you? So, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go right ahead.
Okay. Do you encounter blocks very often, writer's blocks, or just where you feel like you've written everything and there's nothing left? How do you handle that?
I don't know that I feel like I've written everything. Some days I feel a little dumb or that I don't have anything that anybody really needs to hear. But I guess that when I have blocks, one of the first things that I do is I read a lot. I think, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of my poems come out of a part of a conversation. I'll read a line in another poem, you know, that I'm like, oh, I love that turn of phrase, but I want to know more about it. So that generates ideas. And sometimes it doesn't seem to generate ideas, but I know that I'm absorbing good language.
Yeah.
I also... You know, I do other things, like I sit and stare at the wall, and I go for long walks, and occasionally I watch too much Doctor Who. But I think as I've gotten older, my idea of what it means to be a writer has gotten a little broader, and I think that those other things are also a part of being a writer, and you have to intake, and sometimes you have to rest. So I consider that part of my writing life. So I guess,
yeah,
that's what I do.
Yeah. Now, do you encourage people who are considering, or who think they might like to become a poet, would you encourage them to do like a full kind of, studies in poetry? Do you encourage people to take ongoing classes? Do you continue to study as well as being in your group? Kind of how does that ongoing development work, especially when it comes to classes and education, that sort of thing?
Personally, I do occasionally take a workshop, like at the Hugo House. But I have a pretty... I'm lucky enough to have a pretty broad community. I have a national writers group that I'm a part of as well, and we do some critiquing there. For the most part, I think that those conversations that I have with the writing groups keep me pretty plugged into the writing community. And, you know, we're always suggesting things to read or to pursue in those groups. So I don't feel a huge need to take a formal class at this point in my writing career. I that doesn't mean I wouldn't like to, but I've got plenty of work to do in front of me. As far as somebody who's interested in it, gosh, I'm not sure I know how to answer that. I think taking a workshop or a class is a good way to find out whether or not you want and to familiarize yourself with some of what's out there.
And you participate in the Glenn Workshop each year, is that correct?
I do, although the last several years I have gone and done the retreat option just because I had things I was working on.
Yeah.
Some fabulous poets teaching there.
Yeah, that's I definitely am recommending that to people, just having seen so many people come out of it with real kind of really meaty and wonderful fruit of the time that they've spent there. So,
yeah, and the people that go there tend to keep in touch too. So, it's another broader community, which is really helpful.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, it's been so good talking with you. I have many more questions that I would like to ask, which I may do when we meet for coffee.
That sounds wonderful. I'm looking forward to it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Anne M. Doe Overstreet's collection of poetry, Delicate Machinery Suspended, is available wherever books are sold, but we suggest that you purchase your copy from our friends at heartsandmindsbooks.com. You can connect with Anne on Facebook or by visiting her blog, which is Anne with an E, Overstreet, so that's A-N-N-E, Overstreet.wordpress.com. Again, Anne, thanks so much.
Thank you, Christy.